Okay, Shabbat Shalom and welcome to United Israel World Union. This is our Sabbath morning scripture study. Thank you very much for joining us. I hope that all of you and yours are safe and well. And I really appreciate you taking your time this Saturday morning to join us for an ongoing series on the 10 words. The 10 words, often called the 10 commandments, also known as the 10 commandments. But the purpose of this particular series is to really bring out the essence of this incredible piece of scripture. We're going to be talking in detail about quite a bit related to what are some of the ideas that have been put forward. Sometimes I think, and I pointed this out last week, sometimes I think that people, they have a certain idea of what a commandment is. I posted sort of a video clip from the Ten Commandments by Cecil B. DeMille. And of course, he records as the finger is striking into the rock, the Old English, the authorized version of what that commandment was to say. And we're going to get into the detail of the words, not in this week's class. We have one more that's essential to lay some groundwork before we get into the actual words themselves. But this is well worth it. It's very important that we establish this as we move forward. Today's class is called The Fire Law. The Fire Law. Now, some of you know exactly where that particular name is coming from, but don't blow it. Don't ruin it for the others yet, because I want to build up to that. I want to lead us into this idea of the title, The Fire Law. Why is it called a fire law? Now, last week I established that I would be expanding on just a few verses that I would then take the essential meaning of those words and really expand them. And I want to start with that again. So if you'll go with me this morning to the book of Deuteronomy, Deuteronomy chapter 4, Deuteronomy chapter 4. I want to begin again with that particular passage of Scripture, because in a way it captures everything that we're going to be talking about through the series. And then we'll go from there. So Deuteronomy chapter 4, beginning in verse 10. The day that you stood before Jehovah your God in Horeb, when Jehovah said to me, gather me the people together, and I will make them hear my words, that they may learn to fear me all the days that they shall live upon the earth, and that they may teach their children. And you came near and stood under the mountain. The mountain burned with fire to the heart of the heavens, with darkness, clouds, and thick darkness. And Jehovah spoke to you out of the midst of the fire. You heard the voice of words, but saw no form, only a voice. And I want to stop there. Now, this particular passage outlines in many ways the point that we want to really expand in this series on the 10 words. Now, last week's class, I began to set the stage, if you will, to establish a little bit of the context by dealing with the first part of this particular passage, and that is, in setting the context, we talked last week in general terms about the day. About the day that is said here, the day that you stood before Jehovah your God in Horeb. So what I demonstrated last week is that that was a specific day, perhaps pointed to even when they were still in Egypt, where it talked about how they were going to go and hold a chag, typically translated a festival, but the meaning is, in reality, it deals with one of the pilgrim festivals. So this is, he says, let my children go, shalakit ami, let my people go, that they may serve me in the wilderness. They have to keep a chag. Remember, that was in Deuteronomy chapter 5 or Exodus chapter 5 and Exodus chapter 10. So while last week I talked and described in general terms about the day, which according to Deuteronomy is called the day of the assembly. It's a specific day that's unlike any other in the history of humanity. Now, that word, the phrase day of assembly, is used only in Deuteronomy and three times there. We covered those in last week's class. Now, one of the things that I want to do today is, and throughout this series, we have two main accounts. One in the book of Exodus, one in the book of Deuteronomy. And those two together represent all that we know from the scripture standpoint about the events of that day. So we're going to be going back and forth. We're going to compare the text because I want you to notice, and you'll see this as the class continues, what you'll notice and what you'll learn if you didn't already know this is that the accounts in Deuteronomy and Exodus provide different details. And not only do they provide different details, at times we'll be able to compare and even contrast what the two present to us as the story of this great revelation at Sinai. So it's very important that we cover quite a few texts and the story from these two points of view, from the story, the point of view that's laid forth in Exodus and the story as it's presented in Deuteronomy. Now, one of the things that you'll notice today is there will be times where I will go through the same passage more than once under a different category of what point I'm bringing out. That is for a reason. There is a method to the madness. So don't think, well, I mean, he just gave that verse several minutes ago. I want to draw out certain details again and compare and contrast between the Exodus count and the Deuteronomy account. Now, look, all of the people who log in and listen, for the most part at least, are very experienced Bible students. And so my job in presenting this material is to cause you to look, to cause you to think deeply. Why does Exodus say one thing and Deuteronomy another? Why is it that Exodus and Deuteronomy, in recounting the 10 words, don't agree? We're going to talk about that. So today, I want to take a very close look at the Day of Assembly. Now, that's what we talked about last week, but I want to kind of narrow the focus and I want to zoom in on the actual happenings of that day. Not just when was it, not just speculation as to what festival it represented, but we're going to take a closer look at the biblical text as to what is actually happening on what was called in Deuteronomy the Day of the Assembly. Now, one of the things that I want to point out is as a consequence of this event on the Day of Assembly, as a consequence of that, the people, we are told, will believe in Moses. Now, I want you to go with me to Exodus chapter 19. Exodus chapter 19. I think this is an essential point. In Exodus chapter 19, this is, by the way, Exodus 19 is when they arrive at Sinai. Exodus 19 begins in verse 1, in the third month, after the children of Israel had gone forth out of the land of Mitzrayim, out of Egypt, the same day they came into the wilderness of Sinai. Now, I want you to go down to verse 9. Exodus 19, 9. And Jehovah said to Moses, "Behold, lo, I come to you in a thick cloud, that the people may hear when I speak with you and believe you forever." One of the consequences of the events of this great day, when the people hear what is going on. And when they see, we're going to go through all the details of this, the outcome, a consequence of that is that they will believe Moses forever. Now go back with me to Exodus 4. This is a concern for Moses, this whether or not that they would believe or trust him. In Exodus chapter 4, I want to read in verse 1. Moses answered and said, Exodus 4, 1, but behold, they will not believe me. Lo ya'aminu. Moses is told by God to go to Pharaoh, and in his first encounter here in Exodus 3 and 4, he's told to go back to Egypt and to go before Pharaoh with the command, shalak et ami, send forth my people. And part of that process is to let the people know that God has heard your cry and he's going to deliver you. And one of the concerns that Moses has is that the people won't believe him. So go back with me to Exodus chapter 3, and I want to set the stage and build back up into the day of the assembly. If you go to Exodus chapter 3, when Moses first encounters God, it says in verse 1, Exodus 3, now Moses kept the flock of Yitro, his father-in-law, the priest of Midian, and he led the flock away, far away into the desert, and came to the mountain of God, to Horeb. Now, by the way, generally in Exodus, the mountain of God is called Sinai or Sinai. Here, it's called Horeb, which is generally the preferred name of the mountain of God used in Deuteronomy. And I have worked on this extensively and have some ideas about why that is. But I want you to notice here that Moses is on the far side of the wilderness, which has a very specific meaning. And he's there and he's keeping a flock. It says that he comes to the mountain of God. Now, one of the keys that I want you to understand is that this mountain is considered sacred before the revelation of Sinai. In other words, we're in Exodus 3 here. This is when Moses first meets God. And it is already called the mountain of God, the mountain of God. So, Har HaElohim, before the revelation of Sinai. Okay, verse 2. And the angel of Jehovah appeared to him in a flame of fire out of the midst of a bush. And he looked, and behold, the bush burned with fire, but the bush was not consumed. And Moses said, I will now turn aside and see this great sight, why the bush is not burnt. And when Jehovah saw that he turned aside to see, God called to him out of the midst of the bush and said, Moshe, Moshe. And he said, here am I. And he said, do not come near, put off your shoes from off your feet, for the place on which you do stand is holy ground. Moreover, he said, I am the God of your father, the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, God of Jacob. And Moshe hid his face, for he was afraid to look upon God. And Jehovah said, I have surely seen the affliction of my people who are in Egypt, and I have heard their cry by reason of their taskmasters. For I know their sorrows, and I am come down to deliver them out of the hand of Egypt and to bring them up out of that land to a good land and a large, to a land flowing with milk and honey, to the place of the Canaanites, the Hittites, the Amorites, Perizzites, Hivites, and the Jebusites. Now, therefore, behold, the cry of the children of Israel has come to me, and I also have seen the oppression with which Egypt oppresses them. Come now, therefore, and I will send thee to Pharaoh, that thou mayest bring my people, the children of Israel, out of Egypt. And Moses said to God, who am I that I should go to Pharaoh and that I should bring the children of Israel out of Egypt? And he said, certainly I will be with you, and this will be a token to thee that I have sent thee. When you have brought the people of out of Egypt, you shall serve God upon this mountain. So here we have a mountain known as Horeb, called the mountain of God, before the revelation at Sinai. Moses hears a voice out of the midst of fire. The voice gives him a mission to go into Egypt to save the people and to bring them back to the same mountain, and that this would be a sign. The sign, what is the sign? It's going to be something related to a voice from the midst of the fire at that specific place known as the mountain of God. Shalak et ami, God says over and over through Moses to Pharaoh, that they may go into the wilderness and serve me. Now, having laid forth some groundwork, we know that the place is known by Moses before he goes back to Egypt. He knows beforehand where he's going. He's going to a place called Horeb. He knows that there is a sign that God has sent him, and he is going to convince the children of Israel to follow him to this place. And now we go to Exodus chapter 19. Go with me there, please. Exodus chapter 19. Now, Exodus 19, now we are back where it all began. Moses has left his first encounter at the burning bush. He's gone to Egypt, and through a series of blows, of plagues, as they're called typically in English, the children of Israel are now free. They've crossed through the sea. They've wandered for a certain period of days. And in the third month, remember, they leave in the first month. In the third month, they arrive at Sinai. And again, they're back where the story begins. Now, having arrived at this mountain, Moses and the people of Israel are about to experience an event the likes of which had never happened before. And please understand, nothing like this has ever happened since. The event that we are about to discuss was a once in human history to this point, a once in human history event, the most remarkable, awe-inspiring event ever. Now, according to the book of Deuteronomy, the day that this takes place is called the Day of the Assembly. Exodus doesn't know this phrase. There is no mention of the Day of Assembly in Exodus. In Exodus's account, it's referred to as the third day. The third day. These are important distinctions, and over the course of the study, a certain picture will begin to emerge. But the Day of Assembly for Deuteronomy is known in Exodus as the third day. Please go with me to verse 11. Verse 11 of Exodus 19. For on the third day, Jehovah will come down in the sight of all the people upon Mount Sinai. On the third day. Now, prior to this, Moses is told to continually, he's told to continually tell the people to be ready. So he does this. He says, set bounds. You can't come. Anyone who touches the mountain will be killed. People have to stay separate during this period. No intercourse. There are all these rules because there is a preparation for this third day in which everything is required to be in a certain state of holiness. And so this is communicated quite a few times. And then it's stated very clearly that on this third day, Jehovah will come down in the sight of the people on the mount. So we're going to talk about the event. We talked about more generally last week. Now we're going to begin to focus on what happened on that third day. Now go with me, Exodus 19 And we want to look at verse 16. Exodus 19, beginning in verse 16. And it came to pass on the third day in the morning that there were thunders and lightnings and a thick cloud upon the mountains, and the sound of a shofar exceeding loud, so that all the people in the camp trembled. And Moses brought the people out of the camp to meet with God. And they stood at the foot of the mountain, and Mount Sinai smoked in every part, because Jehovah descended upon it in fire. And the smoke of it ascended like the smoke of a furnace. And the whole mountain quaked greatly, and the voice of the shofar sounded louder and louder. Moses spoke, and God answered him by a voice. And Jehovah came down upon Mount Sinai on the top of the mountain. And Jehovah called Moses up to the top of the mountain, and Moses went up. So I want you to think about the words of this particular story, the description that is given here. Imagine, if you will, this dark, ominous, the thickest, darkest, scariest storm you've ever been in. And it's so pitch black that the only time you can see the mountain is when the lightning strikes. This is the image that's in my mind. And every time the lightning strikes, you see the smoke billowing and a fire. I mean, this is an incredible, awe-inspiring sight. And then after this, Jehovah gives forth the 10 words. This particular story is, again, the single most important story when we're talking about the revelation of God's, it's called the testimony in some text, but God's instructions here, and we're going to get into that. Now, go with me. We're going to skip over the 10 words because that's for a following class, but I want you to go to chapter 20 and verse 15. Chapter 20 and verse 15. Or if you're in the English, it's verse 18. Exodus 20, 18 in an English Bible. Exodus 20, 15 in a Hebrew Bible. And all the people perceived the thunderings and the lightnings and the sound of the shofar and the mountain smoking. And when the people saw it, they were shaken and stood afar off. And they said to Moses, "You speak with us and we will hear. But let not God speak with us, lest we die." And Moses said to the people, "Fear not, for God has come to test you, that his fear may be before your faces, that you sin not." And the people stood far off, and Moses drew near to the thick darkness where God was. So there is this idea that the fear and awe was intentional. It was intentional to bring about an effect that the children of Israel would not sin, that they would not break the words which were spoken. In other words, these 10 words that were communicated in such an awe-inspiring event that those present, you would think, would be so shaken that they would say, I just saw that. I will never break these commandments. Now, the fear was so great here, it says, that the people told Moses, we don't want a chance dying, so let's do it a different way from now on. You go to God, you tell us what he says, you come back and tell us what he says, and then we'll do it. Now, that story, that same related episode is covered in here in Exodus 20. It's also covered in Deuteronomy chapter 5 and Deuteronomy chapter 18. You'll recall that as a result of this, God ultimately said, what they have said is good. You know, a lot of times we think, well, I wish they wouldn't have said that because we could still hear God. But God says that's good. And so the ultimate, what comes from that in Deuteronomy 18, and it even tells of this episode again, it says that God says, I will raise up a prophet like you from among their brothers. And he says how he's going to communicate with the people. No longer like this event here on the day of assembly on the third day. But this fear and the awe was intentional. Look with me to Deuteronomy chapter 4. Deuteronomy chapter 4. Now again, we'll be going through some of these verses a couple of times, but I want you to understand there is a reason for this. Here I'm making the point that the fear and the awe was intentional. Look at verse 10. The day, Deuteronomy 4:10, the day that you stood before Jehovah your God in Horeb, when Jehovah said to me, gather me the people together, and I will make them hear my words, that they may learn to fear me all the days that they shall live upon the land, and that they shall teach their children. So the idea of this awe-inspiring event, God intends to put awe in the people so that they will keep, that they will fear God or have awe, be in awe of God all the days that they'll live, and teach this same awe for God to their children. Now, this event is unique in all of human history. I want you to go with me in Deuteronomy 4, look down to verse 32. Deuteronomy chapter 4 and verse 32. For ask now the days that are past, which were before you, since the day that God created man upon the earth, and from one side of heaven to the other, whether there has been any such thing as this great thing is, or whether aught has been heard like it. Did ever people hear the voice of God speaking out of the midst of the fire as you have heard and live? Again, this is a question that can be answered the same today as it was then. You who listen to me today, ask now, from the beginning of time, from the time that man was, ask from one end of heaven to the other, did God ever speak to an entire nation assembled out of the midst of fire where they all heard it and they lived? And the answer to that is only once. And that's the event we're talking about. Now, look down at verse 36, Deuteronomy chapter 4 and verse 36. Out of heaven, he made you hear his voice, that he might instruct you. And upon earth, he showed you his great fire, and you did hear his words out of the midst of the fire. So what we've got here is the theme is repeated. You saw a great fire. You heard this loud voice of God speaking to the assembled nation, and you didn't die. This particular point is stressed over and over and over. It's to instill awe and fear, and it was for the purpose of instruction. It was for the purpose of instruction that he caused them to see his great fire and to hear his voice out of the midst of fire. Now, I got interested in this idea of this fire that was associated with this great day. And so I want to go through a few passages which deal specifically with specific phrases, which causes me to read a couple of these verses to show each point. So the first phrase I'm dealing with is the idea that the mountain burned with fire. This phrase, burned with fire, I find four times in texts that are associated with this day or this place. Look with me back again to Exodus chapter 3, Exodus chapter 3 and verse 2. So we're looking at the phrase burned with fire. And again, in the Hebrew, it's even clearer than it is in the English. So if you were to do a search and you find in your, maybe your, if you have a computer software program, you can look at the phrase in English, burned with fire, find it in the Hebrew and search specifically for this, and this is what you'll find. If you look at verse 2 of Exodus 3, and the angel of Jehovah appeared to him in a flame of fire out of the midst of the bush. And lo, and look, and behold, the bush burned with fire. This is the phrase. But the bush was not consumed. And then Moses turns aside to see. So here we are at Sinai, at Horeb, at the mountain, and we find that an encounter with God is associated with a burning with fire. Now go back to Exodus 19, Exodus chapter 19. And we want to pick up in verse 17, Exodus 19 and verse 17. And it says, and Moses brought the people out of the camp to meet God, and they stood at the foot of the mountain, and Mount Sinai smoked in every point, every part, because Jehovah descended upon it in fire. And the smoke of it ascended like the smoke of a furnace, and the whole mountain quaked greatly. This mountain is on fire. Now look at verse 20 again. And Jehovah came down on Mount Sinai on the top of the mountains, and Jehovah called Moses up to the top of the mountain, and Moses went up. So this particular incident in Exodus 19, where the children of Israel are gathered there, the place is on fire. Back in Deuteronomy chapter 4, verse 11, one more time, because I want to look at two phrases now. In verse chapter 4 and verse 11, and you came near and stood under the mountain, and the mountain burned with fire to the heart of heaven. So what I want you to see here is that the flames are reaching all the way up, is the intended meaning of the Hebrew. So this isn't like you look up and you say, oh, it looks like there's a little fire that they built up there. This, the description here that the mountain burned with fire to the heart of the heaven seems to indicate that the flames are shooting up into the sky. You get that image? And it says, with darkness and clouds and thick darkness, and Jehovah spoke to you out of the midst of the fire. You heard the words, you heard the voice of the words, but saw no form, only a voice. Now this other phrase, you see, it burned with fire, and then you have the voice from the midst of the fire. Now this midst of the fire is also used quite frequently in the description of this day. So look down with me while we're in chapter 4. Go to verse 15. Take therefore good heed to yourselves, Deuteronomy 4:15, for you saw no manner of form on the day that Jehovah spoke to you in Horeb, out of the midst of the fire, lest you become corrupt and make a carved idol, the similitude of any figure, and so forth. So the idea is, you didn't see a form. What you saw was fire. You saw fire reaching to the heart of heaven, but you saw no form. And that was for a purpose as well. Remember, this whole event is to instruct you. Had they seen a form, a similitude of a figure, they would have been tempted to make an idol, a carved image. But Deuteronomy is very clear, they didn't see anything like that. Now, Exodus reads a little bit differently. Exodus seems to say that Jehovah is coming down in the sight of all the people. Now, if that's taken in a pretty literal sense, then that presents a difficulty. Also, by the way, I'm not going there today, but Exodus 24 says that they saw the God of Israel and they did eat and drink. Deuteronomy says that there was no sighting of Jehovah. You didn't see anything. You saw fire is what you saw. Therefore, don't make an idol. So Deuteronomy says you didn't see anything but fire. You saw no form. Exodus, it's a different story. Now look down Deuteronomy 4, verse 33. Deuteronomy 4, 33. Again, did ever people hear the voice of God speaking out of the midst of the fire? Mitoka esh. Mitoka esh. It's speaking from this fire, this awesome fire burning to the heart of heaven. Words are spoken from that fire. In other words, you're the assembled mass below. You can understand that that's where this is coming from. It's clearly proceeding from the fire. Again, verse 36, he made you hear his voice that he might instruct you. Then upon earth, he showed you his great fire. And you heard the words out of mitoka esh, out of the midst of the fire. Again, Deuteronomy chapter 5 goes through the same thing over and over. Deuteronomy 5, 4. Let's see. The Lord, Jehovah, talked with you face to face in the mountain out of the midst of the fire. Mitoka esh. I stood between Jehovah and you at that time to show you the word of Jehovah. You were afraid by reason of the fire and went up not to the mountain. In Exodus, they're told, don't cross this line or you'll be shot through. All right. So, yes, there was a fear of the fire. There's also a command, according to Exodus, that they not cross the boundaries. But this idea is that this awe-inspiring fire is clearly the thing that is most vivid of the story. Now, the question becomes as to the source of the fire. Now, I want to look at a couple of passages which talk about the source of the fire. Go with me to Exodus, Exodus 24 and verse 17. Exodus 24, verse 17. And the sight of the glory of Jehovah was like a devouring fire on top of the mountain in the eyes of the children of Israel. Moses went into the midst of the cloud, went up into the mountain. Moses was in the mountain 40 days and 40 nights. Again, this particular phrase in verse 17, it says, they saw the kavod Yehovah ka'esh ochelet. Ka'esh ochelet. The kavod Adonai ka'esh ochelet. They saw, what they saw was the glory of Jehovah as a devouring fire. Achal means to eat. So imagine the fire is like it's eating itself. You can almost understand how the Hebrew is giving a graphic description of what they're seeing. This fire, the flames all the way up. Now, a key point here is that what they're seeing in the fire, this devouring fire or this consuming fire, is the Kavod Jehovah. So the reason some of this is important is because prophetically we deal with a coming of Jehovah. Look, everybody, Jews and Christians, are all talking about come Mashiach, come Mashiach. But what the Bible, what the prophets see coming, which is even greater, believe me, greater, is the coming of Jehovah. And when James Tabor writes, when he wrote Restoring Abrahamic Faith, at the end of that book, he has some key fundamental points of biblical importance. You know, like here are 10 major themes of biblical teaching. He works through them and he talks about the Messiahs, plural. But he also talks about the second coming of Jehovah. Now, I get a lot of messages in through the United Israel Facebook page and YouTube and so forth and emails. And you know what a lot of people say is they say, this must be a Christian site because it's talking about the second coming. Like, that's so Christian. Well, read it again. It says the second coming of Jehovah. You see, so whenever the prophets in Isaiah says, and the glory of the Lord will be revealed and all flesh will see it together. What is that? The Kavod Yehovah? Oh, wait a minute. When the Kavod Yehovah showed up in Exodus, it was a devouring fire. So you see how these points can be very important in our understanding. So what the people actually see in this devouring fire is the Kavod Jehovah. Go with me to Deuteronomy chapter 9. Deuteronomy chapter 9 and verse 3. In 9 verse 3. Let's see. Understand therefore this day that Jehovah your God is he who goes over before you as a consuming fire. Now here in Hebrew it's Esh Ochla. Again, it's the same words basically. God is a consuming fire. That doesn't mean worship of fire. It means that when Jehovah manifested at Sinai, the single unique event, according to Deuteronomy, and even passages in Exodus, it is a consuming fire, which is the Kavod Jehovah, the Kavod Jehovah. So here it is, Deuteronomy 9:3, Deuteronomy 9:3. Now, because I wanted to pick up a couple of prophetic passages about Jehovah as a fire, I want you to look with me. Isaiah picks up on this theme more than anyone, and I just want to pick up a couple of prophetic texts in Isaiah. So go with me to Isaiah 10. Isaiah 10 and 17. Isaiah 10, 17. The light of Israel shall be for a fire, and his Holy One for a flame, and it shall burn and devour his thorns and his briars in one day, and shall consume the glory of his forest, and so forth. Again, I'm not getting into the interpretation of these texts. I just wanted to demonstrate a couple of these passages in Isaiah where God is associated with flame. Look at Isaiah 29, verses 5 and 6. Yet, Isaiah 29, verse 5, yet the multitude of your strangers shall be like small dust, and the multitude of the terrible ones shall be like chaff that passes away. Then it will be in an instant suddenly that you shall be visited by Jehovah of hosts, get this, with thunder, with earthquake, great noise, with storm and tempest, and the flame of devouring fire, and all the multitude of nations that fight against Ariel, and so forth. It goes on. The idea is that this consuming fire, this devouring fire, which is Jehovah, which is the manifestation of the Kavod Jehovah, is coming again. The enemies of Israel will have to face the coming Kavod Jehovah. Remember, Kavod Jehovah will be revealed in that day, and all flesh will see it together. Look down at verse 30, Isaiah 30, verse 27. Behold, the name of Jehovah comes from far, burning with his anger and in a thick column of smoke. His lips are full of indignation and his tongue as a devouring fire. So this idea that Jehovah's coming is associated with fire. Look down at verse 30, by the way. And Jehovah shall cause his glorious voice to be heard and shall show the descending blow of his arm with the indignation of his anger and with the flame of a devouring fire, with cloudburst and tempest and hailstorm, hailstones. For through the voice of Jehovah shall Ashur be beaten down. See, you get the idea that Jehovah is coming. His voice will be heard. And again, you have this description of a flaming, fiery, consuming fire and clouds and tempest and stormy. You get the picture, right? Now, one other passage, go to Isaiah 33. Again, Isaiah, and there are many, many others. This is the last one I wanted to cover, though. The sinners in Zion are afraid. Fearfulness has surprised the flatterers. Who among us shall dwell with the devouring fire? Who among us shall dwell with everlasting burnings? He that walks righteously and speaks uprightly and despises the gain of oppressions and so forth. So the idea is that the God of Israel is called the fiery, the consuming. He's compared, the Kavod Jehovah is compared to this burning fire. The question is, who can dwell in this presence? So the comments that I'm making about the fire is that when Jehovah appears on that day, on the third day, on the day of assembly, the people witness fire to the heart of the heavens and a voice coming forth from the midst of fire, and it terrifies them. This voice is heard audibly among the people. And what is it that the words say? Go back with me. Let's look again. Deuteronomy chapter 4, verse 11. These are our main verses for this series, Deuteronomy 4, verse 11. And you came near and stood under the mountain. The mountain burned with fire to the heart of heaven, with darkness, clouds, and thick darkness. And Jehovah spoke to you out of the midst of the fire. You heard the voice of words, but saw no form, only a voice. And he declared to you his covenant, which he commanded you to do, the 10 words, and he wrote them upon 2 tablets of stone. So I want you to get this. What the people heard. Now, a lot of people have a lot of different ideas, and those aren't so much an interest to me as what does the text say? What did they hear? Did they hear all of the commandments in the whole Bible? Did they hear, the whole list of blessings and curses from the mouth of God on Sinai through the midst of the fire from Mitoch Ha'esh? No, they heard the covenant, which they were to perform, the 10 words, and then these words that were spoken from the midst of the fire. Just the 10 words were written on 2 tablets of stone. Go with me to Deuteronomy 5. Deuteronomy 5 and verse 19. Verse 22 in the English, I believe. The verses are different. Deuteronomy 5, verse 19. These words Jehovah spoke to all your assembly in the mountain, out of the midst of the fire, the cloud, and the thick darkness, with a great voice And it says here, which was not heard again. But in Hebrew, it's below yourself. And he added no more. A lot of times people say, they ridicule Christian translations and talk about how inaccurate they are. I find that the Koran translation is generally pretty accurate, but the Hebrew does not say with a great voice, which was not heard again. It says, and he added no more. And he added no more. Velo yasaf. Now, what this text tells us is that that which was spoken out of the midst of the fire, the cloud, the thick darkness, with a great voice, and that was added no more, were the 10 words. This is a very key point. Go with me to Deuteronomy chapter 9. Deuteronomy chapter 9. Deuteronomy 9, and I want to begin in verse 9. Deuteronomy 9:9. When I was gone up into the mountain to receive the tablets of stone, the tablets of the covenant which Jehovah made with you, then I abode in the mountain 40 days and 40 nights. And I neither did eat bread nor drink water. And Jehovah delivered to me two tablets of stone written with the finger of God. And on them was written, according to all the words which Jehovah spoke with you in the mountain out of the midst of the fire on the day of assembly. It came to pass at the end of 40 days and 40 nights that Jehovah gave me the two tablets of stone, the tablets of the covenant. So here's the deal. Tablets of the covenant, two tablets of stone upon which are written the words that were spoken on the day of assembly, on the third day, at Sinai, Horeb, from the midst of the fire, and nothing else. Now, Deuteronomy refers to these words that are written on the tablets simply as the words that are written on two stone tablets. The covenant. Deuteronomy calls it the covenant. Now, one thing that you find some 30-odd times in Scripture, and it makes for one of the best Bible classes I've ever heard, Dr. Tabor taught on the Eidut. The Eidut is a name that is given for the tablets, the testimony as it's translated. The tablets of the testimony, the ark of the testimony, the tabernacle of the testimony, Eidut, Eidut, Eidut. Deuteronomy doesn't use that phrase, that term, at all. Interesting. But we'll get into more of this as we unpack this thing. Go with me to Exodus 31. Exodus 31. Now, by the way, one of the things that I like to do when I study, I think a lot of people, when they study the Bible, they read it vertically. In other words, they read Genesis 1:1 all the way through chapter 50, verse 26, and they read Exodus 1:1 all the way to the bottom, Leviticus, Numbers, Deuteronomy. I do that as well, but what I really love to do, and it forms a big part of my current research, is I read horizontally. In other words, if I'm reading about the giving of the Torah, I want to read, what does Exodus say about it? What does Deuteronomy say about it? And let me put those side by side, because that's when we begin to notice some very interesting things. A lot of times people miss the nuances, they miss the details, and they miss the difficulties because they don't do this. And there are no works out there other than the ones that I might be working on that actually do this. So anyway, now Exodus 31 and verse 18. And he gave to Moses, when he had made an end of speaking to him upon Mount Sinai, two tablets of the testimony, tablets of stone, written with the finger of God. So again, here we have a name that Exodus knows, and that Leviticus knows, and that that Numbers knows. Exodus, Leviticus, and Numbers refer to this stone tablet, two stone tablets, as the testimony. Deuteronomy doesn't know that, or doesn't use that phrase, I should say. So, but here it is. We notice in Exodus 31:18, Moses receives the two tablets of stone, and we learn that they're written with the finger of God. Now, after receiving the tablets, Moses learns that the people have corrupted themselves. So we just read the last verse of Exodus 31, and what we get into in Exodus 32 is, the people, your people, Moses, have corrupted themselves and they've made an idol. And so Moses takes the tablets that are the work of God, that God wrote on with his very finger, the same words that were spoken from the midst of the fire to the assembly of the entire people on the day of assembly on the third day. Those words. And he carries them down. And as he gets closer, he realizes what's before him. Look at Exodus chapter 32, verse 15. Now, this is after God tells him these people have corrupted themselves. Moses turned, Exodus 32, 15, and went down from the mountain. The two tablets of the testimony were in his hand. Tablets written on both their sides. On the one side and on the other they were written. The tablets were the work of God. And the writing was the writing of God engraved upon the tablets. So what we learn here is that Moses has in his hand the two tablets. Now this is even more detail. So I want you to understand, these are the work of God. God carved the stones out and everything according to the text. They're the work of God. The writing was the writing of God. See, it differentiates between the tablets were the work of God and the writing was the writing of God, meaning that the tablets were God's work as well as the writing. And they were written on both sides. On one side and on the other they were written, and they were the work of God, and the writing was the writing of God. Okay. Now look down at verse 19. And it came to pass, as soon as he came near to the camp, that he saw, meaning Moses saw, the calf and the dancing, and Moses' anger burned, and he threw the tablets out of his hand and broke them at the foot of the mountain. So he takes the tablets. Now it's interesting that these tablets, if we're being strict with the Hebrew, are in his hand, two tablets in his hand. And by the way, I'm doing, you know, some work on some scroll fragments. And one of the things that I wanted to do was kind of determine how big would this be, you know? And so I can tell you that these two tablets could easily fit in one hand, not like the big tablets that we're used to seeing in art, which comes in late, and it's very Christianized art. But this idea is that they were very small. In fact, in the ancient world, we have examples of law tablets that would at least form an idea for what something like that would look like 3,500 years ago. So anyway, he has the tablets, the work of God, the writing of God on both sides. He comes down the mountain and he throws them and breaks them. Now let's look at Deuteronomy's version of the same. Go with me to Deuteronomy chapter 9. Deuteronomy 9. Verse 15. Now, same story. This is where Moses is told by God that the people have corrupted themselves. Deuteronomy 9:15. So I turned and came down from the mountain, came down from the mountain. The mountain burned with fire, and the two tablets of the covenant were in my two hands. And I looked, and behold, you had sinned against Jehovah and made a molten calf. Now look down at verse 17. And I took the two tablets and cast them out of my two hands and broke them before your eyes. And I fell down before Jehovah's the first 40 days and 40 nights. Now, I just want you to notice that here in Deuteronomy, it doesn't give us an indication that they're larger, but he's got them in two hands now. Exodus 31, he's got them in his one hand, and then he's got here, he's got them in two. Now, you know, people can try to picture that in your mind. I don't know if he's just walking, you know, he's hoofing it down the mountain. He's got one in each hand, but I don't know that that gives us any indication on the size. Now, he throws them down and he breaks them. So now we have to go to the second set. And I want to go through this material with you to wrap up today's teaching, because in next week's class, we get into what was written on the tablets. But look with me, go back to Exodus 34 this time. Exodus 34, and beginning in verse 1. And Jehovah said unto Moses, hew for yourself two tablets of stone like the first. Remember, God made the first tablets, but Exodus 34 says, God tells Moses, you cut the second set out. John Langberg says all the time, you broke the other one, you make your own this time. So that could be it. But he says, hew for yourself two tablets of stone like the first, and I will write upon these tablets the words that were on the first tablets, which you broke. So he says, you're going to make the set of tablets, but God says, but I will write the words on the tablets. And be ready in the morning, and come up in the morning to Mount Sinai, and present yourself there to me on top of the mountain. And no man shall come up with you, neither let any man be seen throughout all the mountain, neither let the flocks nor the herds feed before the mountain. And he hewed two tablets of stone like the first. And Moses rose up early and went up to Mount Sinai as the Lord commanded him, and took in his hand the two tablets of stone. All right. So here we've got Moses makes a set of tablets. He brings them in his hand. He goes up to the mountain, making sure that no one else goes, no animals, no one follows him. Now look down at verse 27. Verse 27. Now notice I skip a lot of context. I want you later to go read Ezekiel 2, but read Exodus 34, because that's something that confuses some people. I'm leaving it out at the present. Verse 27, and Jehovah said to Moses, write thou these words, for after the tenor of these words, I've made a covenant with you and with Israel. And he was there with the Lord, with Jehovah, 40 days and 40 nights. He did neither eat bread nor drink water. And he wrote upon the tablets the words of the covenant, the 10 words. It came to pass when Moses came down from the mountain, from Mount Sinai, with the two tablets of the testimony in Moses' hand, when he came down from the mountain, that Moses knew not that the skin of his face shone while he talked with him. And when Aaron and all the children of Israel saw Moses, behold, the skin of his face shone, and they were afraid to come near him. Moses called to them, and Aaron and all the rulers of the congregation returned to him. Moses talked with them. And afterwards, all the children of Israel came near, and he gave them in commandment all that Jehovah had spoken with him in Mount Sinai. When Moses, speaking with them, finished, he put a veil on his face. But when Moses went in before Jehovah to speak with him, he took the veil off, and he came until he came out a second time. He came out and spoke to the children of Israel, that which was he was commanded, and the children of Israel saw the face of Moses, that the skin of Moses' face shone. Moses put the veil upon his face again until he went in to speak with him. Exodus is the only account of this. We don't learn about this from Deuteronomy. It's why it's important to read all of the sources, all of our text, and look at those stories. In other words, there is some confusion if you read Exodus 34 as to what is written on the tablets and who wrote on the tablets. If you read it, you might get the impression that Moses wrote the words on the second set of the tablets, but we already know that Moses was to make the second set of tablets and that Jehovah would write upon the second set the same words that were spoken from the midst of the fire and the same words that were on the first one. Now go with me to Deuteronomy 10. Deuteronomy chapter 10. Verse 1. This is Deuteronomy's account. I hope you don't mind. This is important that we establish this. Deuteronomy 10. At that time, Jehovah said to me, hew for yourself two tablets of stone like the first. That's what Exodus says. And come up to me into the mountain and make for yourself an ark of wood. Now, wait a minute. He's telling Moses to make an ark of wood. Let's keep going. And I will write on the tablets the words that were on the first tablets, which you did break, and you shall put them in the ark. And I made an ark of shittim wood and hewed two tablets of stone like the first, went up to the mountain, having the two tablets in my hand. And he wrote on the tablets, according to the first writing, the 10 words which Jehovah spoke to you in the mountain, out of the midst of fire, in the day of assembly. And Jehovah gave them to me. And I turned and came down from the mountain, and I put the tablets in the ark which I had made, and they were there as Jehovah commanded me. Now, a couple of things. Several years ago, Dr. Tabor wrote an article, and if someone's listening and can post this, I encourage you to read it. I want to put a link to it on this class blog, because it's one of the things that's important is that in Deuteronomy, the only ark that we know of, the Aron, is made by Moses. It says right there, God tells him, make for yourself an ark of wood, a wooden box, an Aron. He's told to make, it says, Asita lecha aron eitz. Make for yourself a wooden box. And what is this wooden box for? It's to put the tablets in. And it doesn't give any other description about being described in some ornate way. It's just simply aron eitz, a wooden box. And so Tabor's article is on the 10... The Ark of the Covenant according to Deuteronomy. I don't remember the exact title, but hopefully someone's already posted it while I went on and on about it. But it's a very good article. It makes you think, because if you look at Exodus, you get a different box. You get an ark, if you will, that is known to us in our imagination, in our mind. Anytime we think of the ark, we think of this box that is coated in gold, and there are cherubim on top of it, and their wings are extended, and they're golden, and there are poles, and so forth, and so on. Deuteronomy doesn't mention this at all. The only box that has anything to do with the tablets is the little box that Moses made. So there's a reason I'm bringing out these distinctions for you. I want you to think, I want you to look at the text, and I want you to be very much attentive to what we're talking about here. Now, the second set of tablets go in the box that Moses made. And it says, and they're there, just like God commanded. The same words. Different set of tablets. This set of tablets, Moses carved out the tablets. God wrote on them. Same words that were delivered from Sinai or Horeb on the day of assembly on the third day from the midst of fire. He wrote those same words and added no more on the ten words on the two tablets. Now, by the way, this is all that's in the box. Now, later, Judaism had some legends about all sorts of other stuff that was in the box. Judaism did it. Christianity did it, too. The book of Hebrews talks about Aaron's rod that budded and so forth and a jar of manna. Look, they get this from several places in Jewish literature. It says the same things. But I want to know what the Bible says. Go with me to 1 Kings. 1 Kings chapter 8. 1 Kings 8. And let's see where it is. Verse 9. There was nothing in the ark save the two tablets of stone which Moses put there at Horeb, when Jehovah made a covenant with Israel when they came out of the land of Egypt. Now, just in case that's not enough, go to 2 Chronicles. 2 Chronicles chapter 5. 2 Chronicles 5 and verse 10. Let's see if that's right. Yep. There was nothing in the ark except the two tablets which Moses put there at Horeb when Jehovah made a covenant with the children of Israel when they came out of Egypt. So, according to the Hebrew Bible, the only thing that goes in the box is the 10 words written on stone. These words, the 10 words spoken on the day of assembly audibly from the midst of the fire for the entire nation to hear, and the mixed multitude who were with them, by the way, represented the covenant. 10 words. 10 words, and he added no more below yourself. And he wrote these 10 words on tablets. They're written with the finger of God on both sides. The words that were spoken from the midst of the fire on the day of assembly. That first set was broken. A second set was made by Moses and then inscribed with the same exact words by Jehovah again, placed in the box that Moses made, and that was all that was in there, below yourself. What came forth from the midst of the fire that day, and later written on these stone tablets, is called a fire law. Deuteronomy chapter 33, in a poetic piece, the blessing of Moses, the man of God, says in chapter 33, verse 2, Jehovah came from Sinai. It rose up from Seir to them. He shone forth from Mount Paran. And he came from holy multitudes, from his right hand went a fiery law for them. In Hebrew, what's translated here, fiery law, is eshdat. Remember we talked about ke'esh ochelet, the consuming fire. Fire is esh. This is eshdat, and it's such that people debate over what the meaning is. But Esh means fire. And if this rendering is correct, Dat means a decree, an edict. And I like that. It's an edict of fire. The problem is, at least biblically, is that we know this word, Dat, only from the book of Esther. It's late. Esther is late in the biblical story, in the timeline. It occurs 20 times in Scripture, all of which, all of which come from Esther. But it could be that this reference is significant for reasons that we'll talk about later. What God gave the children of Israel, and remember, they're to be a priest to the nations, a kingdom, a holy nation, and they are to teach the nations of the world through their example. These 10 words written on stone are a fire law. And what it precisely do our sources tell us was written on stone? We're going to look at what Deuteronomy says, and we're going to look at what Exodus says. And we're going to work through side by side, and we're going to try to understand why they read differently. I mean, these are the Ten Commandments, after all. If you read Exodus 20 and you read Deuteronomy 5, they do not read the same. But we're going to look at the similarities, we're going to look at the differences, and we are going to talk about the words spoken from the midst of fire, written on tablets of stone. And beginning next Saturday, next Shabbat, we're going to begin working through the 10 words that forever changed the course of humanity. Shabbat Shalom.